but I have to be careful with my voice. So Joni's going to help me a couple times too when I have little passages to read. So I'm going to do my best to keep this a little brief, a little edited from what I would probably normally do to save my voice. But I am excited to be here because I wasn't sure it was going to happen. So this means I'm recovering a little bit. So. And thank you, everyone, who has been praying for me. I know there have been a lot of people praying for me, bringing my family meals. We've had a challenging 6 weeks between my husband's surgery and my various health issues as well. So thank you very much. It's very much appreciated. So, chapter 9. Quick reminder where we left off. The wall is completed. 2 weeks ago, we saw the people experiencing this big revival, this sense of unity. Then they had this really powerful conviction of their sin, which then turned into this celebration of God's provision and his action. And this chapter comes just 2 days after the end of their final celebration from last week. So they're still in the seventh month, which is one of their big celebration months. And now they're coming together as only Israelites. They have sackcloth, ashes on their fasting. So this is, again, an outward sign of where their hearts are. They're in this humble, penitent, very focused on the Lord place. And they're, again, reading the law together. They're worshiping the Lord. And then they go into this really wonderful confession. Thank you for your patience reading through all of it. But I wanted us to just sort of have it fresh in our minds as we're responding to it. And I wanted to talk about two elements of this confession that are a little bit different than at least I sort of traditionally think about confession in our sort of new covenant context. The first one is this is a corporate confession. That's not something that at least I have experienced very frequently. And then this confession also addresses both their sort of present day state and then the historical context of the Israelites. So first, let's talk a little bit about corporate confession. So why are they doing this together? And I think that this is, again, another huge unifying sort of symbolic act for the people. For a little context, we can look at 2 Chronicles here, and this is where the Lord is giving some instructions to Solomon after he completes the temple. I'm going to have Joni read this verse 4.
If I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, and my people, who are called by my name, humble themselves and pray and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, and will heal their land.
Thank you. So this again is this idea that if his people come together and return their hearts to him, he's going to hear them. So I think that's one aspect of this corporate confession. And I think it also takes a really humble and repentant spirit to do a corporate confession where you're acknowledging sinfulness as a people, because it's no longer about my sin versus your sin, but it's really just about us coming to the Lord with that heart. And then this idea of confessing their sins, but also the sins of their ancestors, these historical sins. I'm going to have Joni read this section from Leviticus, which, again, the Lord is giving instructions to Moses. This will give us just a little bit of context here, too.
They stood in their places and confessed their sin and the sins of their ancestors. But if they will confess their sins and the sins of their ancestors, their unfaithfulness and their hostility toward me, which made me hostile toward them, so that I sent them into the land of their enemies, then when their uncircumcised hearts are humbled and they pay for their sin, I will remember my covenant with Jacob and my covenant with Isaac and my covenant with Abraham, and I will remember the land. They will pay for their sins because they rejected my laws and abhorred my decrees. Yet in spite of this, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not reject them or abhor them so as to destroy them completely, breaking my covenant with them. I am the Lord their God. But for their sake, I will remember the covenant with their ancestors, whom I brought out of Egypt in the sight of the nations to be their God. I am the Lord.
Thank you. I think that's all the reading I have for you, Joni, so you can just relax now. So again, like I said, this just kind of gives you a little bit of context. This is sort of what the Lord laid out to them, and this idea of confessing their sins and these historical ones. So here, you know, they're sort of reaping the consequences of both their individual sin and their sin as a people across generations. They have this covenant with the Lord in a long history of disobedience, really. And so I think there's a couple things that are beneficial to doing this. One of which is it gives them a lot of perspective. So it's going to allow them to really recognize sin patterns in themselves, in their life, but then also as in their lives of people. And I think it also really highlights God's character. When you look at something laid out like that so clearly and sort of analyze it from that perspective, some things can pop out at you that you might not see if you're only considering where you are today. And then also I think this can really serve as a warning for them. They can say, wow, look at what has happened in our history as people when we disobey, when we don't listen to what the Lord has for us. How can we prevent that from happening again? Okay, let's move into the prayer itself a little bit. So this one starts with praise for who God is, and then it really kind of hits the high points of God's provision and faithfulness and the people's failures across their history. So I think at this point, to save my voice a little bit, I want you guys to do a little bit of table discussion about what, let's start with just the Israelites. So what stood out to you in the description of the Israelites? So you can kind of discuss for a few minutes and then we'll come back together and summarize.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies. Sorry to cut you off. So I have up on the slide just a, I'm not sure if I got them all, but I tried to compile a list of the descriptors of the Israelites and sort of noted some that were repeated over and over again to sort of see what was stressed. And to me, I thought these two verses sort of summed it up very well. But as soon as that, as they were at rest, they again did what was evil in your sight. And even while they were in their kingdom, enjoying your great goodness to them in the spacious and fertile land you gave them, they did not serve you or turn from their evil ways. So I think, you know, the description of the Israelites, it's pretty blunt and at times kind of shocking. Like, I know whenever I read the part about the blasphemy of the golden calf after God delivers them from Egypt, I'm just like, how could you do this? But then when I sort of think about it in these more general terms, and it actually doesn't take me that long to identify some of those sin patterns in my own life. So I thought that was an interesting exercise to just sort of go through and, you know, figure out how, when I read this, am I identifying with this? Does it seem removed from me? And just sort of contemplate that for a little bit. To me, it seemed like this prayer specifically was emphasizing the Israelites' stubbornness, their rebellion, their blasphemy, and their actions, sort of just emphasizing turning away from the Lord repeatedly and only crying out to him when they're in distress. So now, I want you to do the same exercise, but I want you to consider what stood out to you in the actions or descriptions of the Lord. So I'll give you a few minutes for that.
Yeah.
Here, compiling the list of what was really emphasized here. And I thought these three verses summarized it well. And when they cried out to you again, you heard from heaven, and in your compassion you delivered them time after time. But you are a forgiving God, gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love. In all that has happened to us, you have remained righteous. You have acted faithfully while we acted wickedly. So it seems that they're really stressing his compassion, his patience, and faithfulness, even in the face of their great sin and rejection of him, really. And the actions in this prayer specifically stress his desire for their good. Let's talk about some of the overall elements of this confession as well. So one thing that I found really great was that there was praise throughout the whole thing. And I know that's something that I could definitely add into my times of confession with the Lord, and I think it would help bring balance to it. It's also a very honest and accurate assessment of their sin with no blame or excuses. And I think that that is challenging personally. But I wanted to remind us of an important side note here. So the purpose of this confession was not to beat themselves up. It was not to dwell in the grief of their sin. We remember from last week how the Lord, that's not what he wanted for them. He didn't want them just sitting there mourning and weeping. He wanted it to move them to humility and repentant hearts, but then that to move them into praising God for his love and provision and forgiveness. And I really think that putting these two things together, so the honest assessment of your sin right next to praising God for who he is, I think it has the effect of almost magnifying or even emphasizing the character and the goodness of God as well. In this confession as well, they acknowledge a pattern of behavior and a continual need for the Lord. And then at the end, they have this sort of request for deliverance. And I think all of these elements could be incorporated into our confession life today, both individually and as a church, I think. I shared last week that I sort of tend to get stuck in sort of grief part of confession and repentance. And I think putting in a few more of these, you know, claiming the Lord's promises and praising him could help bring balance to me personally and some better perspective to my confession prayers. And the last thing I want to talk about this morning is hope. So I thought a lot about hope as I was studying this, because I just kept thinking, like, did the Israelites just feel doomed to repeat this cycle? Because, you know, I read it and that's my response. Obviously, I have the New Covenant perspective of it, knowing that they ultimately needed to be set free by the Savior. But I asked the question, where can they draw hope from this under the Old Covenant? And I think there's a lot here, actually. So one is that God, he listens, he cares, he provides, and he rescues. He acted mightily for the good of his people, despite their incredible failures. Also, they can draw so much hope from God's character, his compassion, his love. And he also disciplines with purpose. So the consequences of their sin always had the purpose of bringing them back to him. And he never abandons them. And I think that those are really important things to remember as we study this, and that would have, I hopefully, brought them a lot of hope. And then for us, you know, where do we draw hope from this passage? And I think it's good to remember that God's character and his heart for his people is the same today. You know, he wants good for us. He wants us to come back to him. And I think we can all resonate with considering God's great mercy in the face of our great sin. And I want to emphasize here that I hope studying confession can sometimes feel a little heavy. You know, the process of confession can feel kind of heavy, but I wanted to stress here that there really is freedom and joy in confession. Like, you can come to the Lord and confess anything. Obviously, he already knows it, but, you know, you can confess anything. Look at the list of things that they confessed in this prayer. I mean, they killed his prophets. They worshipped fake gods right after he delivered them with miracle after miracle. So really, you can lay it all out there and let it bring you to joy in the forgiveness of the Lord and peace. So that was one thing I wanted to stress today. And then also just this whole section to me is just calling out for Christ. So it's anytime you consider more fully what Christ really freed you from, I think there's just so much hope and joy that can come from that. So that was my encouragement from this section, if you find considering confession to be a little challenging at times. But, the very next chapter starts with the words, in view of all this. So that's my little teaser for next week. I actually don't even know who's teaching next week. But I'm done. So I've written again some discussion questions here that you can take with you to your groups or discuss anything that resonated with you from the study today. I won't read these, just to, again, try to save my voice, but you could you know, take a picture with your phone or something for that. But thank you all for your patience with my challenging voice. And you now are dismissed.